Stuff You Should Know is brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details. Credit scores, down payments, interest rates. Car buying can be a numbers game, but you don't have to be a math expert to get the keys to your dream car. Just use Kelly Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. Crunch your numbers and get personalized results so you know exactly how much you'll pay each month for your car. It's like having a magic wand for your wallet. Presto! The car you've been wanting is now within reach. So hit the road and leave your calculator at home. AutoTrader.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark with Charles W. Chuck Bryant and Jerry. We're just hanging. Figure we press record and see what happens.
Yeah, we are a terracotta army of three. Mm-hmm. Not very imposing.
Or terracotta.
Did you go to the High Museum and see this when it was around?
No, I didn't. You know, Yumi did, and I wish I would have gone, but I did not.
Yeah.
But she was quite blown away.
It was awesome, and I hadn't heard of it until then. And then when I went and saw it, I was like, this is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. What a great story. And then wanted to podcast about it and then just sort of forgot. And now here it is a year later or however long.
Yes.
It was a while ago.
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. But it's still a pretty fascinating story.
Yeah, and that exhibit, if you live on planet Earth, go to the website and see where it's going to be because it travels around.
Is it like the bodies exhibit?
Yeah, I mean, there's this exhibit, and then I think there's permanent exhibits elsewhere.
There's a permanent exhibit at the site itself.
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing. Maybe one in London. I'm not positive.
Well, London has everything.
But they do.
They really do.
No, the only thing they don't have is 12-ounce beers.
because they're 16-ounce.
That's right.
Yeah.
You don't need it. When I took a trip there, I was like, what's with all these tall boys? And they were like, what's that?
Right.
I'm like, oh, right. I get it now.
Yeah, and it's not like you when you go to the pub, you don't go in for a 12-ounce, or you go for a pint.
Yeah, and it's an imperial pint, right?
Is that more than 16 ounces? Is that 16.9? Is that one pint 9 ounces? I'll bet it is.
Jerry, hold up fingers. Jerry said 20 ounces is an imperial pint, so I was wrong. 16 is a standard pint.
Are you sure it's not 25, Jerry?
That's called a double deuce. That's called a Coors double deuce.
Double deuce is 22 ounces.
24, technically.
Why?
Well, because a 12 is a single, right?
No, but a double deuce.
Oh, a deuce?
Yeah.
I thought double deuce just meant we're going to put two beers into one can.
That's the double beer. What are we talking about today?
I don't know. I'm thirsty all of a sudden, though.
You want a beer?
It's Friday. I'd love a beer.
Well, let me just reach into my bag here.
Your cooler bag?
I carry around like a purse.
I wish, man. That'd be fun.
Cooler fanny pack.
Drinking on the job like it's the 1950s.
Yep.
All right. Let's get serious, buddy.
Okay, Chuck. On the morning of March 29th, 1974, 7 farmers set out to dig a well.
So begins the article on HowStuffWorks.com.
Yes, but it also begins this story.
Mm-hmm.
A pretty amazing story, actually.
Yeah, it's awesome. This was in the Chinese village of...
good luck.
Zixiang.
Oh, that was pretty good.
That's what I'm going to say. And they were digging for water and got down about 13 feet and hit something hard and dug up a terracotta face and head.
Yeah.
And we're like, yeah, exactly. They're probably like, whoa.
Yeah.
Or whatever the Chinese expression for whoa would be.
Whoa's kind of universal.
Oh, okay.
I'm curious. We found out we're not banned in China, by the way.
Yeah.
So hello to all of our listeners out there in China.
Uh-huh.
And will you let us know what whoa is in Chinese?
Yeah, I think we should do a show sometime on universal sounds.
Yeah.
Like I've heard different... or read different things about how people laugh in different countries and
like,
how people remark of affirmation or decline something. Like, I think it'd be really interesting.
Yeah, they're called idioms, right?
Is that what it is?
I think so.
Like, here we might go, huh? But somewhere else they might go, ooh.
What else?
I don't know.
We have focus here. Terracotta Army.
Yes. So they alerted the government, like any good citizen should, and said, hey, I think we have something here you should come look at.
Yeah, because they dug down a little more, and they found shards of the same type of pottery, and a lot of it in kind of vague human form.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they were like, there's something weird going on here, so let's contact the authorities.
Yeah.
And the authorities said, archaeologists away, and sent them out to the site.
Because it was 1974, they said, hey, let's contact the Chinese government right away.
That's right.
I don't know if that would happen today.
The Chinese people?
You think?
I don't know.
It depends on who they are.
I would guess they probably were more likely to in 74 than today.
All right. So what they knew, the government and experts and archaeologists said, well, hold on a minute. You guys are digging near the burial ground of Qin Shi Huangdi.
Nice job.
And he was the first emperor of China, and he had a huge mausoleum, and I bet you anything that's what you guys have found.
And it turns out they were right. The archaeologists
right
were
the
right. So the legend had it that Qin Shi Huangdi, China's first emperor,
mm-hmm.
Had himself built a pretty awesome mausoleum. As a matter of fact, you couldn't even call it a mausoleum. It was called a funerary complex. It was so massive.
Oh, yeah.
But as they started to dig and get further and further along in this excavation, which they have still not even come close to completing from what I understand.
1% or something?
Yeah.
It's the size of Manhattan.
The size of Manhattan.
Yeah.
His mausoleum.
Yeah.
They started to realize, like, it's even bigger than we ever thought. Like, it wasn't lost. They knew that he was buried somewhere around this area.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, you don't go digging up emperors' tombs.
No.
But these farmers had found something pretty interesting, and it was enough to get the archaeologists over that, and they started to dig. And they still have yet to excavate Qin's tomb, his actual tomb where he's buried.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that later. But when they started to dig, they started to reveal like more and more of these terracotta figures.
Mm-hmm.
And they would stumble upon one room. And first they stumbled upon a room and they found, Chuck, like 6,000 of these things, of infantrymen.
Yeah.
All standing at the ready, all larger than life. They were about 6 to 6.5 feet tall.
Yeah, that's including the base.
Yeah. All made of terracotta.
Yep. Crossbows, finger on the trigger, dudes on horses.
Well, those are in separate rooms. So first room was like 6,000 infantrymen.
Yeah, it was lined up like a...
Information
would be lined up.
Then there was another room that had like specialists, like cavalry, archers with crossbows.
Mm-hmm. Blow darters.
Yeah. And then there was a third room that had, I think, 86 like commanders. It was like the command room.
Uh-huh.
So basically what they revealed was this terracotta army in formation in this guy's grave.
Yes, with the idea that he wanted protection in the afterlife because he was one of the great jerks of world history.
He really, yeah.
He was terrible.
He was a tyrant for sure.
He perhaps was responsible for the deaths of more than 1 million of his citizens.
Okay. He also, though, got things done.
Yeah, let's talk about the guy.
Okay.
So he was the first emperor. Before him, China had 7 kingdoms.
Yep.
And in 481, all these kingdoms said, you know what, I want to be the main kingdom. So it started what was called the Warring States,
yep.
An era of battling for land and superiority.
And I saw this really neat documentary on Nat Geo, I think,
mm-hmm.
called China's Ghost Army, I think it's what it's called. I posted a link on our podcast page for this episode.
Uh-huh.
Totally worth watching. It's like an hour. But they say that before this, prior to this Warring States era, when an emperor died in Qin, the Qin kingdom, they would kill the whole court. Hundreds of people would be buried alive with the emperor.
Holy cow.
And then this Warring States, these battles and wars were so significant as far as casualties went, they're like, we can't do that anymore. We need them to go fight in the wars.
Yeah.
So they stopped that tradition. But it was because of this the Warring States era.
Interesting.
And that, can you imagine like 200 people just being mass buried alive together?
No.
Because the emperor died.
I can't imagine. So let's get back to this jerk.
Sorry.
Cheen. He overtook and basically was the first emperor, forced people to be in the army,
mm-hmm.
built up a huge army. He relocated in his first year about 120,000 families.
And that's like Stalin did that same thing. It's like you can't have ethnic unity and then that kind of collective thought and then potentially an uprising
yeah.
if you break up that kind of ethnic bonds by basically bussing people in and out of different areas.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But this guy was doing it like about 2,000 years before Stalin.
Crazy. He burned all the books. He burned all the writings. Scholars that didn't jibe with his line of thought were buried alive or beheaded.
Yeah, he was a piece of garbage, it
he
sounds like.
He was terrible. He assembled a workforce of a million men to build about 5,000 miles of roads.
And the Great Wall of China?
Yeah, the first Great Wall of China. So while we said he was a jerk, he made a point. He got things done. I mean, he got a monetary system that was unified.
He also unified weights and measurements.
Yeah.
He unified China from seven kingdoms into one country, and it's still that way today, 2,000 years later.
Yeah.
And if you've noticed a similarity between Qin and China, that's because the country's named after him.
Yeah. So he got things done, vital figure in China's history.
But he did it.
A brutal, brutal, controlling, murderous dictator.
Right. He wasn't asking.
No.
And he also had a really conflated view of the empire that he'd put together. And you can see this apparently in the money that he minted. Like different regions that he conquered had different kinds of money. So he did create like a single monetary system, I think you said.
Yeah.
And that money was square shaped with a hole in the center. So kind of like a square donut.
The Ban Liang coin.
And that coin at the time in ancient China, the square represented the earth and the circle represented the sky or the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he was saying is that this earth, my empire, is even greater than the heavens that surround the earth.
Yeah.
That's how good I'm feeling about myself right now.
Yeah, he felt pretty good.
Yeah.
But he was paranoid. And I think that usually comes when you're on top and you get there by any means necessary.
Yeah.
You're going to be watching your back your whole life. Specifically, he came from the west and conquered eastward, so... When he was buried, he had the terracotta army facing east
yep.
to protect him because of all the badness he had done. And this is after he had killed hundreds of scientists that he commissioned to try and prolong his life.
Yeah, so we talked about him actually in the bizarre medical treatments episode, I think, without realizing
yeah.
it. That at the time, they believed mercury had some sort of like life enhancing or immortality bestowing properties.
Uh-huh.
And he would take mercury pills.
Right, that's right.
And they think that that's ironically what killed him.
Yeah.
But he, in addition to mercury, he sent out people to like find fountains of youth or whatever was the Chinese legend version of that.
Yeah.
He was obsessed with remaining alive and simultaneously, like you said, totally paranoid with dying.
Yeah.
So he must have been a very tormented person.
Yeah, he killed 480 doctors and scientists were killed who could not come up with a way to make him immortal. And again, buried alive or beheaded.
Great.
Not a good guy. All right, you want to take a break here and talk more about the Terracotta Army?
Yes.
All right.
What are you looking for in a new smart TV? 4K picture quality? High quality and immersive sound? A sleek design? All of those are givens, but only the new Roku Pro Series has all of those and the Roku streaming experience and award-winning OS. Get fast, easy access to all your apps like iHeart, where you can stream all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all day. And regular all-inclusive trips to Roku City. The new Roku Pro Series, a smart TV built by the streaming pros.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Chuck, when we were talking about this guy, I think you painted a pretty good picture of him. I guess he comes to – either he comes to grip with the idea that he's going to die, because at the time, like, he's trying to chase immortality. Mm-hmm. He's concocting a huge burial mausoleum for himself, I guess hedging his bets in case he does die.
Sure.
But by this time, like, Confucius and other scholars in China had basically, like, philosophically debunked – the idea of life after death.
Yeah.
So this man was utterly crazy by his contemporary standards.
Yeah.
And that kind of shows, if you step back and really think about the attitude and the mentality behind what he was doing. But he at some point, either came to grips with the fact that he was going to die, or he was just hedging his bets and thought he was going to remain immortal. But just in case, let me have this incredible grand funerary complex created, and let's build a terracotta army to protect me in the afterlife.
Yeah, it's really neat to look at the terracotta army now as art, but it's 8,000 soldiers.
Yeah.
Like, this guy was clearly cuckoo.
He was off his rocker.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a bad man.
He was a bad man. All right, so shall we start with the army?
Yes, let's. Because it's not all that was... that he had commissioned, but the army's it's pretty significant.
It is significant. Like you said, they are in formation, so the front dudes are, they're kneeling down, they're bowmen, and they were famous, the armies they had then, and this is one of the reasons he took over, because mm-hmm. they figured out the crossbow, and they figured out how to shoot while riding a horse, and that was basically all she wrote.
Yeah, everybody else is like, your mother.
Yeah, like down here with a sword on the ground.
Right.
And you're shooting at me from 20 feet away with some weird metallic bolt.
No fair.
I guess not metallic, but wooden.
Yeah.
They weren't forging steel back then.
I wonder when they did start.
I don't know. Sounds like a podcast.
It does. How steel works.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
I could see that.
So you have these bowmen, they have on their armor, their fingers on the trigger,
mm-hmm.
they're incredibly detailed down to the soles of their feet.
Yeah, they have, the shoes they're wearing have like tread marks on the bottom.
Yeah, they took great pride, these artists, clearly, because they probably didn't want to get killed.
Yeah.
Because each of them had to sign, in case there was a flaw, it could be traced back to who built this one.
Yeah.
And so, I bet they were killed if they didn't like it.
They most decidedly were. There were 83, they found the stamps, which were ultimately the signatures of 83 different foremen.
Okay.
And each foreman had a team of apprentices working under him. And the reason that they did assign those stamps was so that he could have them killed if he didn't like how slow work was progressing.
Sure.
If he didn't like what it looked like. And at first, Chuck, they were like, well, this is... clearly, they just set up an assembly line. Molds were known to the Chinese back then, and that's the only way you could possibly create 7,000 figures from a terracotta army. And they found that, yes, actually, the heads were created through molds. Mm-hmm. I think that the arms were and stuff like that. But the bulk of them were created by this thing called coiling.
Okay. So what is that, like 3D printing?
Very much so, actually. Uh-huh. They take clay and hammer it until it's soft and pliable.
Yeah.
And then you wrap it in like a rope around it, and then you mold it.
Yeah.
And the thing, it really took there's people who are recreating it to try to figure out how they did it.
Oh, I love that stuff.
And they've examined like broken pieces so they can see the inside, and mm-hmm. they can see the coiling evidence very clearly. And they're like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, you can't quickly make... all these figures in an efficient way by coiling. Why would they not just use molds? And finally, somebody realized, like, this emperor was a bloodthirsty tyrant. He didn't care about efficiency.
Yeah.
He cared about differences, distinctions.
Uh-huh.
So while the heads, just the actual shape of the heads were made in molds, the bodies were made by hand, each one.
Wow.
Through this coiling method. So where you could make like a molded body in maybe a week, it would take a month to do one body by coiling. And that's what they were doing because he wanted them different.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
He just didn't want to carbon copy his soldiers.
Exactly.
Wow.
So each one of these, the body was made by hand through this incredibly intensive coiling method.
So they're starting from the ground up, obviously, with the base.
Right.
And then coiling their way up.
Yeah.
The legs then were molded and affixed, as well as the arms and torsos.
No, not the torsos.
Oh, not the torsos.
No, that's not right.
Okay, gotcha. But then the heads, they said they found 8 different head molds.
Yes.
And that's just the big mold, not the faces.
Right. The faces were done by hand individually as well.
Right. Each face.
Yeah. The hair.
Different expressions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the hair, you know, warriors who had had the most kills had longer hair and a bigger updo.
Right. Bigger beehive.
And so they would, you know, they took great care into making, you know, the most revered soldiers have their hair match as it should. Basically, yeah. As realistic as they could.
Yeah.
Like all the way around.
If you're just an infantryman, you'd be wearing like one of those beanies, a beanie hat probably.
Yeah.
with maybe like your bun just kind of sticking up off to the side.
Yeah.
Underneath. If you're a general, you might be wearing a huge hat with a pheasant feather and a bow tying the whole thing underneath you.
Pretty fancy.
Yeah, very fancy. So these things were incredibly detailed. They weren't like a knockoff Star Wars figure that you would find in Bulgaria or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Or China, yeah, sure. That was way more appropriate than Bulgaria.
They probably make the real thing, too.
Yeah, these were very detailed. Not, you know, you wouldn't want to say lifelike. They're still artistic, slightly. But they were pretty detailed still.
Yeah, and they the ones that you see now when they you see them in the museum or you look it up on Google, they are not colored, but that is because of humidity and time.
Yeah.
But originally, they fired them in the kiln and they painted and lacquered them as well.
That's right.
I'd love to see those.
Watch that National Geographic thing. They've redone one.
Oh, really?
In the original colors that they think.
And they were cool.
Almost garish.
Wow.
They're so different, like colorful-wise and lots of surprising lavenders and blues and purples and things, reds,
yeah,
garish.
Colors used to be way more garish.
Right. They were doing some assembly line stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the bulk of it, though, was coiled by hand.
Yeah.
The faces, the hair, all done by hand. And then each one was painted by hand.
Yeah.
And then given a coat of lacquer. That's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane that Sky would have had an assembly line of 7,000 of these things built and unpainted. But he didn't. He went even more detailed. And apparently also, I learned from that documentary at the time, lacquer was an extremely expensive product.
Oh, I'm sure.
And he was using it on his terracotta soldiers.
It still ain't cheap.
Yeah.
And there wasn't just the soldiers. There were also there was a strong man in another room and some, what do you call them? Not circus performers.
Acrobats.
But, yeah, acrobats.
Yeah.
And I looked up the strong man, and he was noted for the detail of his biceps.
And he had a gut, too.
He did. He had a gut and some guns.
Yeah.
Gut and guns.
He's missing his head, right?
Yeah, I didn't see a head.
Yeah. But, he's a big boy. He's like, he was built like Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
Kind of.
All right. You want to take another little rest here? We'll take a quick nap.
Okay.
And then I'll nudge you awake.
Okay.
Very gently.
All right.
And then we'll finish up.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to have supervision, enhanced hearing, extraordinary reflexes, to be, dare we say, superhuman? Well, Roku's new Pro Series TV can't do any of that for you. But with a 4K screen, side-firing speakers, and a blazing fast refresh rate, it'll sure feel like it. Elevate your entertainment using all your favorite apps like iHeart and play all your music, radio, and podcasts with the new Roku Pro Series. Your senses aren't better. Your TV is.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up, buddy.
Huh?
It's time to finish the Terracotta Army.
Oh, man. Oh, I got like crust in my eyes.
Ooh, look at you.
Okay, I'm back, Chuck.
Okay, so Qin wasn't the only ruler to do this, right?
No, he wasn't.
Who else did it?
Well, do you remember in our pyramids episode?
Yeah.
Although if it hasn't come out yet, no one will know what I'm talking about, but you will eventually.
Uh-huh.
We talked about how the pyramid of Khufu was the pinnacle of pyramid building in dynastic Egypt.
Yes.
And then the pyramids got smaller because the ruler's cred, I guess, went down as people started to worship the sun instead.
Yeah, great point that I had never considered.
Very similar thing happened in China as the Qin dynasty only lasted for another 4 years after Qin Shi Huangdi died. And then the Han dynasty started.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hans apparently had a much easier hand with their subjects. And so as a result, even though they had terracotta armies buried with them, they were like a third to a sixth of the size of Qin's terracotta army. And they take that as a sign that this might and power over people had diminished tremendously.
Yeah, I think it was symbolic of a kinder regime.
Right.
And one that was not also booby-trapped with, very much like Raiders of the Lost Ark. Apparently, Qin's tomb or the whole complex was booby-trapped with, like, blow darts and stuff.
Crossbows. Ready to go.
Yep.
And also, one of the reasons why this thing was booby-trapped was to prevent looters, because remember, there's a historian that came along not too long after he's part of the early Han dynasty, from what
yeah.
I understand. His name is Sima Qian. And Sima Qian is the one who first described Qin's mausoleum. And one of the things he described is that on the ceiling was a constellation made of pearls and gems.
Crazy.
Mountains had been chiseled out of gold.
Yeah.
And that, that Qin's tomb itself was surrounded by a river of mercury. Because remember, again,
yeah, that makes sense.
They said that it bestowed immortality.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, a lot of what Sima Qian was talking about or writing has been proven correct.
Yeah.
So, and they've also found that in the soil around Qian's tomb, where they think he's buried, there's higher than unusually high mercury levels.
Yeah, like super high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they think these crazy people buried him around a river of mercury, and who knows if there's a constellation of pearls and gemstones. Maybe Sima Qian is right.
Yeah, and that also makes it super dangerous to excavate still.
Sure.
Which is one of the reasons why they haven't done more there. There are 600 pits that they have unearthed thus far, which is, like I said, I think only about 1%. And they're sort of afraid to look elsewhere because of the booby traps and the mercury.
I don't blame them.
So a few stats, 36 years to complete this army.
Yeah.
Or the tomb, I guess.
Right.
700,000 laborers, they estimate. 820,000 square feet, 100 feet deep. I saw 8,000 warriors. This is 7.
I've seen different numbers, too.
Let's just say between 6 and 8.
Okay.
40,000 weapons, and apparently these weapons are in really good shape.
Well, yeah, I mean, they were like bronze swords and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They weren't made of like, papier-mâché.
So I guess they did have metal.
Yeah, okay. Bronze at least.
That answers that. And each one of these terracotta soldiers weighs about 330 pounds.
Yeah, which is crazy because they're not even solid.
Oh, yeah, they wouldn't be, right? So what is the coil on the inside, and then they smooth out the outside?
Right.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we did mention that Emperor Han Ling Di, who came 53 years after Qin, had his smaller terracotta soldiers. There's also the Weishan site, which they found in 2002. Another terracotta army, but they're all just a foot tall.
They might as well not even be there.
Symbolic and cute.
Yeah.
But also symbolic, again, of a kinder, what was the one quote from?
Do nothing in order to govern.
Yeah, not quite the same as Qin.
That was Emperor Han Ling Di's quote.
He was
or motto.
Qin was a little more do whatever you need to do to squash any disruption.
Well, yeah, and Han Ling Di came along and said, you know what, we're going to not tax you guys that much. We're going to do away with forced labor.
Yeah.
So let's party. He was like the Rodney Dangerfield of the Han Dynasty.
I think he got respect, though.
Sure, that's true.
So that's he was the Rodney Dangerfield post-death, because Rodney has tons of respect.
What was Rodney Dangerfield's epitaph? Do you remember?
I don't know.
It's like one of the best ever.
Someone I was on the Mark Maron's interview show, WTF, was interviewed, and they were talking about the old days hanging out with Rodney and just what a beast that guy was.
What do you mean?
Just party beast.
Oh, yeah.
Like legendary. You hang out with Rodney and you're in for a long night. Apparently.
I can imagine.
Yeah, but a really good guy.
I found it, Chuck.
What?
His epitaph on Rodney Dangerfield's gravestone.
Oh, boy.
There goes the neighborhood.
So classic.
Yeah. Awesome.
You buy a hat like that, you get a free bowl of soup.
Ooh, that was pretty good. Man, you are like the Rich Little of this podcast. You got anything else?
Nope.
If you want to know more about the Terracotta Army, go see it. And while you're doing that, you can type those words into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. Terracotta is one word, by the way. One word. Mm-hmm. Smithsonian Magazine.
Oh, did they goof it?
Mm-hmm. And since I shamed Smithsonian Magazine, that means it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this animal imprint feedback. Hey, guys, I'm currently listening to how animal imprinting works and could not even finish it because I had to write you. My godmothers, Dorsey and Susan, live on, own, and run an urban farm in Austin, Texas, on the east side. They have several animals such as chickens, bunnies, geese, miniature donkeys, oh boy, and ducks. Recently, a mother duck had no interest in her babies, and they got adopted by a chicken. That chicken got sick of them trying to play in all of the rain, and we have all the rain we've been getting, and left them on their own. A male goose named Gustavo took the baby ducks in and treats them as his own. On top of that, the next batch of baby ducks born, he went and took as his own. Oh. Now, Gustavo has about 10 baby ducks that follow him around the nest with him.
He has his own private army.
That's right. And they're not terracotta. They're made of baby duck feathers.
Right.
The softest army. I failed to mention that Gustavo is the face of the farm, greets people, follows around my godmothers, and gives tours to whoever stops by. So she says, she finishes with, I started listening to y'all about 5 months ago and cannot stop. I start many of my sentences now with this podcast I was listening to. Say many random facts that I learned from you. I also teach high school world history. And on the days I need to, the students not to talk, a.k.a. the days that I don't have a lesson plan. That's
man,
Chuck's words.
A giggly email.
I play one of your episodes that applies to what we were learning and have them do book work. I find many of them not working and listening to your show instead.
Nice.
So that is from Christina Mowdy. And Christina, thank you for your work as a teacher. And hello to all your students.
And hello.
Hello to your godmothers and Gustavo.
Yes. Hello, Ms. Mowdy's class. Thanks for listening.
Ms. Mowdy. That's so nice.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what they call her.
Yeah, that'd be great. They call her Christina. That's way too modern of a school for me.
Yeah. And big ups to Gustavo. That's pretty cool. I want to take a Gustavo tour someday.
Oh, and she sent a picture of Gustavo and the ducks, too.
Well, we should post that somewhere.
All right.
Unless it's copyrighted. Let us know. If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
What are you looking for in a new smart TV? 4K picture quality? High quality and immersive sound? A sleek design? All of those are givens, but only the new Roku Pro Series has all of those and the Roku streaming experience and award-winning OS. Get fast, easy access to all your apps like iHeart, where you can stream all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all day. And regular all-inclusive trips to Roku City. The new Roku Pro Series, a smart TV built by the streaming pros.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.